In the latest episode of America's ongoing tragicomedy, President Donald Trump has decided to wage war on museums. Yes, you heard that right. The man whose previous battles include a wall and an election he claims was stolen now finds his adversary in the Smithsonian Institution. Because apparently, the real threat to our nation isn't climate change or income inequality. It's museums talking about how bad slavery was. Trump's tirade against these bastions of history is as absurd as it is predictable. In a Truth Social post that feels like a fever dream, he lambasts these cultural institutions for focusing too much on the negative aspects of American history. You know, those pesky little details like slavery and discrimination that some might argue are kind of important when you're trying to understand America's past. The administration's new directive aims to purge narratives deemed divisive or partisan. Translation: anything that doesn't fit neatly into Trump's vision of American exceptionalism should be scrubbed clean. After all, who needs historical accuracy when you can have propaganda? This move comes hand in hand with a sweeping review announced by the White House targeting everything from public-facing content to internal emails at these museums. It's an impossible task set up for failure. Like asking someone to rewrite War and Peace but make it more upbeat and less Russian. The Smithsonian Institution, with its legacy dating back to the 1840s thanks to British scientist James Smithson's estate funds, now stands in the crosshairs of this Orwellian revisionism campaign. It's governed by a board of regents led by Chief Justice John Roberts, not exactly your typical executive branch agency. But hey, why let facts get in the way? Meanwhile, Vice President J.D. Vance has been tasked with ensuring no government dollar supports exhibits that stray from this administration's narrative path. A job akin to rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic while ignoring the iceberg ahead. The irony here is rich enough to serve at Mar-a-Lago. Trump once praised these very institutions for their role in honoring African-American heritage and culture. But consistency has never been a hallmark of this presidency unless we're talking about consistently defying logic. As we watch this spectacle unfold like some dystopian play where reality itself seems negotiable, one can't help but feel trapped in an endless loop of absurdity and despair. A collective nightmare where truth is malleable and history is whatever those in power say it should be. Welcome to 2025, the year we learned nothing from our past so we could repeat it all over again.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of First World Problems, where we discuss the earth-shattering dilemmas that keep privileged folks awake at night. Today, we're diving into the world of tennis, a sport renowned for its grace, elegance, and apparently its ability to spark existential crises over mixed doubles formats. Yes, you heard it right. The US Open has decided to revamp its mixed doubles event. They've slashed it down to a two-day spectacle during Fan Week, with a best-of-three sets format where each set is just four games long. And get this, no advantage after deuce. It's like they're trying to turn tennis into speed dating. Now, some might say this is an innovative move designed to bring more excitement and big names like Carlos Alcaraz and Emma Raducanu into the mix. But others, well, they see it as nothing short of a cultural apocalypse. Kristina Ledenovic called it embarrassing. Because when you're used to years of sacrifice on the court, nothing says disrespect quite like having fun. The defending champs are calling it a profound injustice. It's almost as if someone suggested serving champagne in plastic cups at Wimbledon. How dare they disrupt the sanctity of hitting balls back and forth, and let's not forget about prize money, now up to $1 million for the winning pair. That's an increase so hefty even Elon Musk would raise an eyebrow, but don't worry, it's only five times more than before. You know, just enough for players to consider buying one extra yacht or maybe splurge on organic kale chips for life. Meanwhile, Bob Bryan thinks this could revolutionize mixed doubles forever. Or at least until next season when everyone forgets about it because they're too busy arguing over whether strawberries belong in Pim's cup. So here we have it, a radical change that's both groundbreaking and utterly trivial, a perfect example of how first world problems continue their reign over our collective consciousness. Who knew tennis could serve up such delicious irony?
Ah, Hurricane Erin, the latest celebrity in our never-ending reality show known as the Atlantic Hurricane Season. This tempestuous diva is here to remind us of nature's unyielding power. A spectacle that's both mesmerizing and utterly terrifying. As Erin pirouettes along the East Coast, it's not making landfall. How considerate. Instead, it's gracing us with life-threatening rip currents and dangerous surfs. because what's a summer without a little peril? North Carolina is rolling out the red carpet for this high-end Category 2 guest. Governor Josh Stein has declared a state of emergency, which is essentially code for brace yourselves. The Outer Banks are prepping like they're hosting an unwelcome family reunion. Mandatory evacuations, no swim advisories, and road closures on Highway 12. It seems Erin prefers her audience captive rather than captivated. The irony is rich as beachgoers continue to treat these hazardous waters like just another sunny day at the shore. With rip currents wide enough to rival city blocks, one might think twice about taking that casual dip. But alas, human optimism or folly knows no bounds. As if orchestrating a grand finale, Erin's winds promise to deliver waves towering over 20 feet high. A potential masterpiece of coastal erosion awaits. Sand dunes may vanish like memories of last year's hurricanes Ernesto and its ilk. Homes teetering on the edge of collapse at a touch of suspense, a cliffhanger worthy of any dystopian drama. But wait, there's more. The Atlantic hurricane season isn't satisfied with just one star performer. In true ensemble fashion, we have understudies waiting in the wings. Potential tropical storms Fernand and Gabrielle are eyeing their debut roles. The National Hurricane Center assures us they're keeping watchful eyes on these burgeoning threats, as if we needed another reason to be glued to our screens. So here's your daily dose. Nature continues its relentless march while humanity clings precariously to its coastal perches. Yet we persist in building castles in the sand even as the tide rolls in, a testament to either our enduring spirit or our collective insanity.
Welcome to the Existential Crisis Hour, where we ponder the meaning of life while juggling the absurdity of human endeavors, like vaccine recommendations. Today, we're diving into a delightful tale from CNN titled COVID-19 Shots for Children, because nothing screams existential dread like trying to decipher health guidelines in a world that can't agree on whether pineapple belongs on pizza. So here's the scoop. The American Academy of Pediatrics, AAP, has decided to shake things up by recommending COVID-19 vaccines for infants and young children. This is a bold move considering it's not quite in line with our good friends at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC. You see, the CDC suggests making vaccine decisions based on shared clinical decision-making, a phrase as comforting as an IKEA instruction manual when you're missing half the screws. The AAP stance is clear: vaccinate those kiddos unless they have allergies. Meanwhile, the CDC's Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices, ACIP, was recently revamped with individuals known for spreading vaccine misinformation. It's almost poetic how we humans manage to complicate even the simplest tasks, like protecting our offspring from deadly viruses. But wait, there's more intrigue. Like a plot twist in a soap opera no one asked for, AAP boycotted an ACIP meeting because they deemed it illegitimate. It seems there's some tension between these groups, an existential tug of war over who gets to decide what's best for our collective health. Who knew vaccines could be so dramatic? In the saga of scientific squabbles and bureaucratic ballet, we find ourselves asking, what does it all mean? Is there any inherent purpose behind these endless debates? Or are we merely actors in an absurd play where logic takes a backseat to politics and personal biases? As we ponder these questions, let's not forget that insurance companies are involved too. They're required to cover vaccines recommended by ACIP under the Affordable Care Act. So naturally, vaccine recommendations become less about science and more about who can shout loudest at committee meetings. And just when you thought it couldn't get any more surreal, enter stage left. The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services accusing AAP of putting commercial interests ahead of public health. It's like watching two clowns argue over who gets to drive the tiny car off a cliff. Meanwhile, parents everywhere are left wondering if they're doing right by their children or simply pawns in an elaborate game of medical chess played by people with far too many acronyms after their names. In this theater of existential uncertainty, perhaps all we can do is laugh at the irony that despite centuries of evolution and technological advancement, we're still fumbling through life trying to protect our young ones from invisible threats while navigating bureaucratic mazes designed by well-intentioned but deeply flawed humans. So next time you're faced with life's big questions, like whether your toddler should get that COVID-19 shot, remember, it's just another chapter in humanity's ongoing quest to make sense out of chaos. And maybe that's enough reason for us all to keep muddling through together until someone finally figures out how this whole existence thing is supposed to work. Or at least until happy hour starts.
In this capitalist fever dream, where the relentless pursuit of profit knows no bounds, even the sacred aisles of Home Depot become a theater of absurdity. The retailer, a behemoth in the world of home improvement, now finds itself entangled in the intricate web of tariffs, a modern-day tax that masquerades as economic policy while serving as yet another cog in the merciless machinery of capitalism. As Home Depot's CFO reluctantly admits to the Wall Street Journal, prices are set to rise. The Trump administration's tariffs have cast their shadow over imported goods, and so it begins. A modest price movement here, an incremental hike there. It is but a whisper of what's to come, a mere ripple before the tidal wave that will inevitably wash over consumers already drowning in economic uncertainty. Less than half of Home Depot's inventory hails from foreign lands, yet even this fraction is enough to send shockwaves through its pricing strategies. In a calculated dance with global suppliers, Home Depot seeks diversification, not out of benevolence or strategic foresight, but rather as an insurance policy against future geopolitical caprices. A symphony conducted by market forces, where each note played is dictated by profit margins and shareholder satisfaction. Despite boasting a 5% increase in quarterly sales, an ode to consumerism's unyielding grip, the company sees its net income slip ever so slightly by 0.2%. A testament to higher operating costs, gnawing at its financial entrails, like ravenous vultures circling above. Yet still, they march forward with unwavering confidence that one day soon, those deferred projects will resurrect themselves into profitability. The CEO speaks with practiced optimism about mortgage rates and economic uncertainties, as if these are mere obstacles on an otherwise smooth path toward fiscal nirvana. But beneath his words lies an unsettling truth. Consumers teeter on the brink of restraint, not because they lack desire for new kitchens or remodeled bathrooms, but because they are shackled by financial trepidation. And so we witness this spectacle unfold. A retail giant poised on tenterhooks waiting for customers, wallets to open wide once more when conditions permit it. All while quietly acknowledging that demand persists like some insatiable beast lurking just beyond reach, until circumstances align favorably again. In this dystopian landscape where every decision hinges upon maximizing returns at any cost, where human needs become secondary considerations, the capitalist machine grinds onward without pause or mercy. Fueled by dreams spun from dollar signs rather than genuine progress or well-being for all involved, parties alike.